Welcome to Ultimate Sports Parent Radio, where we help parents and coaches instill confidence and ensure success in young athletes.
This is Lisa Cohn. Today on Ultimate Sports Parent Radio, I'm here with Dr. Harold Chinitsky, a sports psychologist who works with athletes of all ages. He's a co-author of Your Mind, an Owner's Manual for a Better Life. He's here to talk about how young athletes can quiet their inner saboteur. Also joining us is my brother, mental game expert, Dr. Patrick Cohn.
Get our new program, The Ultimate Sports Parent, a 14-day plan for kids' success in sports, by visiting the product section of youthsportspsychology.com. You'll learn how much pressure is too much, what to do when kids underperform, how to react to kids' losses, how to deal with difficult coaches, little playing time, and more. Visit youthsportspsychology.com, and while you're there, pick up our free ebook.
Hi, Dr. Chinitsky. Hi, Patrick.
Hi, Lisa.
Good day. Hey, thanks for having me.
Good. Well, let's just tell us a little bit about who you work with before we get started.
All righty. I was fortunate. I was on the other side of the coin first as an athlete, and we had a sports psychologist working with our team. And then over the years, I had the opportunity of pursuing my doctorate, and I began up in the Baltimore area when I was at Johns Hopkins at the School of Medicine. Had the opportunity of working with NFL, NBA, MLB, and NHL. So I was working with, at the time, the Bullets, before they changed their name to the Wizards, a number of players on the Orioles and the Redskins, as well as several nationally ranked junior athletes. And since moving to Florida, I have a pretty close connection with NFL and PGA, and even one of the PGA players wrote an endorsement specifically on the book, and it was really a delight. And most people are aware of this golfer by the name of John Daly, and he has really in the last several months taken a concerted effort to turn around the saboteur, which is kind of what we were planning on talking about, that he, for a long time, had been engaging in behaviors that were unhealthy in terms of his overall performance, and here he is now really addressing that in a very healthy and productive way, and he's really proud of the changes he's made.
Well, now let's jump right into it, and can you tell us a little bit? First, let's talk about the problem, and then tell me a little bit more about the solution.
All righty. I guess in particular, when we're talking about this concept of the saboteur, you know, here we are, within all of us, there is this voice that challenges our capability, and that's reasonable. If you're getting ready to study for a test and you think you have way too much confidence for the test, you may not study for it, and you may turn out to fail it. And on the flip side of it, if you are thinking it's too overwhelming, you may actually interfere with your capacity to even pay attention, and same with sports. When you don't practice because you think you're all that in a bag of chips, unfortunately, you really don't develop the skills in order to compete at the most elite level. And there are a lot of individuals, based on the way they think about themselves, they engage in certain behaviors that actually interfere with optimal performance, and that's the saboteur.
Can you say what the behaviors are?
Oh, there's a whole host of them. I mean, when I look at my work with athletes, I kind of put it into a triangle. And the top part is just all the behavioral steps that they need to engage in, from having exercise physiologists, skill development, tactical interventions, the ability to eat right, sleep, all those kind of aspects that are behaviorally required. The bottom left would be more of the way they think about things, cognitive processing. The bottom right of the triangle would be emotional, physiological reaction. And those two on the bottom, as a sports psychologist, I'll certainly work with. The top part, if someone doesn't do what would be expected to be able to increase their optimal performance, that's when we look at it as a saboteur. So someone may purposely engage in a behavior that either doesn't get them to have the skills, they may choose poorly, they may think poorly, and they may carry around some rather negative tapes along with them. So early training, self-image, and then destructive behaviors. I mean, we hear about people who are getting arrested in college right now, who are engaging in very inappropriate behaviors while they have everything in their life going for them. And that would be the saboteur, setting themselves up for failure.
Ah. So, Patrick, do you have another term for this? I guess you call it the inner critic, right?
The inner critic. I call it self-limiting beliefs and expectations. I think that's kind of where I go. I mean, the classic example that we talk about is the perfectionist who has good intentions, but there's some belief systems there that will, I guess, lead them to that place of inner critic. I'm not good enough. I'm not being perfect. I'm making too many mistakes. And I think that's what you're saying.
Right. That's probably about half of it, not believing in oneself and therefore interfering with actually achieving it. And then there's even taking it to the other half where you do things that literally trip you up. You become your own worst nightmare and do things that actually get you into trouble. I oftentimes will have principals call me for their athletes who may be, Mr. or Miss Basketball in their state or football in their state, and I'm asked, I don't want you to make them a better athlete. I want you to make them a better person. And they have some grandiose sense of self, which interferes with their ability to be able to follow rules, be respectful to a team, apply themselves, be a good role model. And so they do things that actually interfere with not only their performance, but also their team's performance.
Sounds a lot like the success syndrome. Are you familiar with a book by Steven Berglass called The Success Syndrome?
Absolutely. You get too big of an ego.
Which, Lisa, it talks about people who reach the top or reach bottom after they've reached the top, basically, about athletes with that have sabotaged their own performance in some way or another. Like they talked about Boston Bruins' Derek Sanderson resorted to drugs and alcohol once he reached kind of the – he was being paid more than anybody else in the NHL, and he had a lot of guilt associated with that. But I see a lot more with my work. I see a lot more fear of failure than I do, fear of success.
Right. It's interesting with the fear of failure, and I think we might be looking at it the same way, that since I don't want to fail, I actually can stagnate. I may not do anything that's going to be beneficial. And so I limit, and that's, I guess, what you're talking about with the self-limiting thinking. There's a lot of perfectionistic athletes that I've worked with, and I always say perfection should be a driving force, a motivator, but it should never be a criteria by which to judge yourself by. Mm-hmm. And for all the athletes, I had a golfer who had an irrational belief, and his belief was when I get onto the green, I need to be down in one. There's nothing wrong with that as a goal, but when he didn't sink his putt, he would start to become rather upset with himself. He would dwell on the missed putt. He would end up tightening up. He'd miss the next putt, and he'd end up three-putting. And as they say in golf, you drive for show, but you putt for dough. And his irrational thought, I asked him just simply, do this assignment. Go home. Find out what the lowest PGA average is for putting. And when he did that, he found out that, in fact, there wasn't anyone who was putting near a one. As a matter of fact, it was in the middle of 1.5. It was actually 1.6 at that time. So even the most elite golfers on the planet couldn't achieve this. So he was setting himself up for failure by having an irrational belief, and that irrational belief then interfered with his capability of performing because he held himself to an unattainable goal.
Mm-hmm. This sounds a lot like what we talk about.
Yeah. We use the term expectations as demands that athletes have on their performance.
Yep.
If they don't reach those demands, and then – all heck breaks loose, basically. Lots of problems can ensue there.
Yeah, I always encourage the athletes, whether they're like some of the skaters that are young kids, but they're internationally ranked to the collegiate and the pro athlete, that they have to become their best coach on and in their sport. They have to be able to manage these situations. So everything their coach teaches them, everything that I teach them, everything that they learn that's really productive, to keep a steady kind of course, to keep a level head. And we all kind of are aware of the greater our emotions get. If we become too overwhelmed emotionally, the lower our cognitions function. So we don't think clearly. We tighten up. We change the way we perform. Using golf again, there was a study done not too long ago, this past year, I should say, where on average, all golfers have when you sum up the total, the average PGA score, let's just say, is one score. Let's just call it a 72 for everyone out there. When Tiger plays in a tournament, All the other golfers average one stroke worse. And the reality is, it's not that Tiger is changing them, it's they are changing the way they play. And so they're, instead of focusing on, sorry, go for it.
Go ahead.
Well, instead of focusing on the one thing that's within their control, and that's their own behavior, they're focusing on an external distraction, whether it's the name of the event, the amount of money they can have, the sponsors, a creek 150 yards away, whatever it is, those are all distractions. And in this case, it happens to be when Tiger's in a tournament, the average PGA golf score jumps one stroke. So they are changing and focusing on something external rather than focusing on something that they can control, which is their own performance.
Do you think parents, what is their influence on young athletes' kind of negative critic?
Great question. I do a presentation when I'm brought into a lot of the larger training facilities for the parents, and it's called Conscientious Neglect. The pros asked me to come in and help the parents be able to put their hands up and take a step back. A lot of parents, unfortunately, focus on outcomes rather than the process. That's an end stage. I tend to call that downstream. I'd rather deal with upstream behaviors. And a lot of parents tend to be rather critical. And they can either be critical of the child's performance, they may try to supersede the coach's coaching, all of which interferes with a child's ability of having the fun in the sport. And I always like to refer to that with young kids. If you've got a child that you want to have, you know, get involved with sports, you need to make it fun first, because that's the number one reason why kids stop playing sports. It's no longer fun. And parents sometimes make it more like a drill sergeant experience. So I always talk about it, and I use capital F-U-N, it's fundamentals. You have to start out at eye-hand coordination. It's the love of the sport. It's enjoying it for intrinsic purposes. So some parents are hypercritical. They do excessive coaching. They get the kid to play the sport that the parent wants to play. They live vicariously through their child, and they use extrinsic motivators. So they say, if you do well, I'll give you this, as though love is conditional.
Mm-hmm.
And all of those cause really bad outcomes for kids who want to be athletes.
Well, you've been tremendously helpful and interesting, and I'm really glad that you joined us.
Anytime. I love sharing this type of information.
To listen to the rest of this audio, visit kidssportspsychology.com.